Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
What's up, everybody? It's another edition of Inside Boxing Live. We're coming to you from Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar here on 35th and 7th. This is one of our big sponsors here, and we got a big week of boxing coming up. The sport has been a little bit of a lull over the summer. Everyone's on vacation, but we got big boxing coming up this week with the return of Manny Pacquiao versus Lucas Matisse, a fight that was in a lot of jeopardy. People didn't know if it was going to happen. We don't know if it was going to be on TV here in the U.S. It's going to be on ESPN+. We didn't know if the money was going to be there. It was vintage Pacquiao at this stage in his career. But there's a lot of chaos in his camp. Of course, he will be without Freddie Roach for the first time in a very long time, going back to when he was fighting over in the Philippines. And he'll be fighting with Boo Boy, of course. And a lot of people don't know exactly what version of Manny Pacquiao we're going to see on Saturday night. He's going to be in there with Lucas Matisse, another fighter who we also don't know what he has left. And a lot of times those types of fights, those two styles where guys are on the tail end of their careers, their defense isn't what it used to be, those usually make for the best types of fights. And just from here, some crazy stats here. Pacquiao, in his last four fights, his fight averages is 11 of 39. You go back to his previous five, he was 20 for 56. So clearly we're seeing a drop-off in Manny Pacquiao as he gets older. He's up there at age 39, but can we see vintage Pacquiao? I know that he has his sights set on fighting a Lomachenko. Maybe he's cooling a little bit on the thought of fighting a Crawford. We know that Pacquiao wants the paydays. He needs the money, and it's going to be interesting to see him on ESPN+. We also have Regis Progre. He's fighting on ESPN+. He's fighting on regular ESPN at 7 o'clock this Saturday, and we'll be joined very momentarily by the one and only Lou DiBella. Big-time promoter here in New York City, and he is the promoter for Regis Progre. So we'll hear everything we want to hear from Lou about his up-and-coming superstar here that he says at 140 pounds. And it's an interesting fight because not only is every time Regis Progre fights, you want to watch because he is a TV-friendly type of fighter, but the winner of this fight goes on into the World Boxing Super Series. Everyone is expecting Regis to win this fight, and I think it's very exciting to see his name in the World Boxing Super Series, the 140-pound division that they just announced recently. So we're going to keep your eyes on that. So it's a big weekend of fights. This past weekend, didn't get as much action as we wanted. Jose Ramirez, Danny O'Connor, they had a big big fiasco over the weight. Danny O'Connor, he needed 7 IVs. He had some kidney failure. You saw the photos on Instagram that surfaced. You saw some of the things that were said on Twitter, some of the nasty things. We'll get into boxing Twitter with Lou DiBella. People saying that, they just let the fight go on, and, we have to worry about the main event. But you have to worry about the health of these fighters. You see a fighter that needs 7 IVs just to get his consciousness back, potential liver failure for Danny O'Connor. It's just something's going on with the sport, and I don't know what you can do to fix it. Maybe same-day weigh-ins, but, things... It's getting out of control. You see it in the UFC all the time, where fights get called off, and these guys are making these extreme weight cuts. But that's what's going on this weekend. So a big, busy weekend in the ESPN front. And looking down the road, we also have the World Boxing Super Series Cruiserweight Final, Usyk versus Gassiev, which is going to be probably a candidate for Fight of the Year. But we have to bring in right now the one and only Mr. Lou DiBella. A very interesting interview with Lou. We go through everything, the making of Gotti Ward, his time with Bernard Hopkins and Jermaine Taylor, all that and the other. Of course, he'll talk about Regis Progre. It's coming up next with Lou DiBella. All right, look at this. We're here at Jack Doyle's Restaurant and Bar with my longtime buddy, the incomparable king of New York City, Mr. Lou DiBella. We got Guinnesses. We're drinking
Mother's cheers. Milk.
Cheers.
Right, cheers.
It's really good at 11 a.m.
Hey, You're Jack Doyle's. Yeah. You got to have a Guinness.
That's true.
And you also have to pump your sponsor.
Jack Doyle, as I said, where we are, right at the top.
I said it more emphatically.
Jack Doyle's.
We're at Jack Doyle's, drinking Guinness.
35th and 7th, probably the best place to watch a big game. The World Cup has been
only
going
the
on.
Canobios could get me out into this place.
That's another thing. Lou came from Seacliff, New
came
York.
Came from Long Island on a sunny day and a beautiful day where I could be out of my boat. I came here to be with you boys.
I know.
Discuss boxing. On Regis Prograis Fight Week.
That's what I want to talk to you about. And it's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. The state of boxing and some big things that are coming up here on the schedule. For you, you have a busy week coming up. You're going to be flying down to New Orleans for Regis Prograis. He's got a big fight. And I think a lot of fans were surprised to see that the winner of this will be entered into the World Boxing Super Series 140-pound division.
You know, Regis is a beast, and he's got power in both hands. He can knock you out. He gives angles. He's got, you know, I promoted Sergio Martinez a long time ago, and I brought Sergio to a Regis Prograis fight, and Sergio was like, we fight differently, but he reminds me of me.
It's funny you say that, because we had Regis on our show, and I said to him, you know, Lou has said that he reminds you of Sergio, and he was, like, completely taken back by it because of the both hands and the athleticism and kind of sticking his head in there and pulling it out.
Did he like it?
He loved it.
No, but it's really the truth, because Sergio, you got to remember, his body was already messed up when I got him. He came here in his, like, 33 years old, but before he made his debut here, he was completely unknown. He had God-given ability. He did things other people can't do.
Right.
The angles, the punches coming out of nowhere, the intelligence to see openings and be able to do unorthodox stuff to exploit those openings. I see those things in Regis. Regis does things other guys just can't do. Regis got a really good trainer. Bobby Benton's a real good young trainer. Bill Benton's son, been around boxing his whole life. And I think he does a great job with Regis, but I think a lot of the stuff that Regis is able to do is just, like, freaky, God-given talent.
Yeah, I saw him fight up at Turning Stone last June at Hall of Fame weekend. I was doing CompuBox, and I heard a lot about him. But then he got the guy out of there in, like, two rounds, took him out. Then we saw him against Ndongo this past year. So his career is starting to tick up here.
But he's destroying guys.
That's what I'm saying.
But he's destroying guys that are good fighters. Joel Diaz was a good fighter.
Right.
You know, I mean, Ndongo's a good fighter. There's nothing you can do about superpower you don't see coming. And his defense is better than people think, too.
Well, he can get away with the slipping because of his athleticism and his youth.
Yeah, and I'd rather his hands stay up.
Exactly.
And I scream and yell, keep your hands up, as I used to do with Sergio. Drives me crazy because that, like, you know, he has that elusiveness, you know, that quickness. He tremendous athlete. Now, really interesting kid, too. You look at his backstory. I mean,
displaced by Katrina.
Didn't know if his mother was even around for, like, a week. Like, was worried about his family's survival. Like, the family was split up. Everything turned out all right. Thank God for them. But then he was in Houston, and then, you know, he decided to stay there. He'd already been displaced. He was in Houston, and the boxing scene in Houston is very strong.
Between the Charlos. He's friends with the Charlos.
But he spars with them.
I've heard some stories, too, from them. Growing up as kids, they must have been wild.
Well, they also think that Regis is a badass.
That's what they were saying.
Regis is like a gym legend in Houston, like, because guys they know how good he is. All the other fighters in that Houston area, and there are so many of those terrific fighters that fight out of Texas, and they all know how good Regis is. And I don't think it's surprising that he's going to go into that World Boxing Super Series.
That's a good move.
Because he's going to get a chance to fight, you know, a couple of other champions. He could walk out of that tournament with three belts.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty cool situation for him.
There's a few things that fans were
for anyone who's listening, though, hold on. When is this going to air, by the way?
Probably later tonight or tomorrow.
Okay, good. It's UNO Lakefront Arena. Tickets are at Ticketmaster.com. Or at the UNO Lakefront box office.
It's kind of cool. It's in New Orleans, too.
Yeah, New Orleans is a great town. I mean, it's going to be really hot, but I don't care, man. I'd rather sweat in New Orleans than anywhere
else. I want to see Lou walking down Bourbon Street with one of those yardsticks.
I've been walking down Bourbon Street with yardsticks on many occasions.
Just screaming out, Lakefront Arena, this Saturday. Just a big crowd.
I'll be promoting up and down the streets of New Orleans, eating crawfish and drinking beer.
Careful. I heard it's a dirty little place, though.
Right.
New Orleans.
You got to be careful. Yeah, you do have to be careful. Yeah. But it's not a dirty little place. It's still one of the great places in this country. You just got to watch it. You got to be careful out there.
Another thing, though, I'm glad to have you here, is we saw Prograis fight so many times on Showtime, and he was, you know, banging the drum for Ramirez fight. does that, now that I see that he's on ESPN now and he has the top rank, I guess you're working in association with Top Rank.
Just on this fight, yeah.
On this fight, does he obviously he still wants Jose Ramirez. We saw him this past week and didn't have the fight. I want to talk to you about the extreme weight cuts too.
If I was Jose Ramirez, though, I wouldn't want Regis.
You think that's the case here? I think.
Yeah, not yet. I mean, they were pretty clear about it. And I don't. You know what? Too, it's cool. Like, you know, I mean, if you're gonna talk the talk, you should walk the walk. And I have to say about Regis, he walks the walk. But from a Ramirez standpoint, he sells a lot of tickets in Fresno. And look, they were gonna put him in with Danny O'Connor. You know, I think they think the kid needs a little bit more time and development before he gets in the ring with a Regis. But we took advantage. Instead of fighting, we worked out a situation I think that works well for everyone. Regis is going to get paid pretty well to fight on ESPN.
And yeah, he's going to be on ESPN and before Pacquiao.
Right before Pacquiao. I mean, Regis thinks it's an honor that he'll be on ESPN, the main network ESPN,
right,
leading into Manny Pacquiao on the app. I mean, I know Regis thinks it's cool that he's on, like, you know, part of that Pacquiao night. You know, Velasco's one of those Argentinians that can punch. He's a tough guy. I don't want to jinx myself or take anything for granted. I don't think he's in Regis' class, but he's a dangerous kid, like a lot of those South American punchers are. Mm-hmm. You know, Exerto Ramirez just had a tougher time than he thought he was going to have, yeah, against a kid that can punch from South America. But you know what? Regis has been destroying really good fighters and doing it in style and doing it rather quickly. I mean, when Regis sees an opening, he takes it. He's proven in tough fights against other guys that he can go the distance and he can take a fight to, right, its conclusion. But when he sees an opening and he thinks he can end it, he goes for it.
Now, how did Mark Wahlberg, Peter Berg, I see that they got their mitts into Regis from a management standpoint. How did that come about? Because I'm going on Instagram, I'm seeing them talk about this guy.
They work with a young kid named, who I have a lot of respect for, a young kid named Sam Krakowski, who runs the Wild Card West gym.
Right, and, in Hollywood, right?
Yeah, and they've been talking for a while together about you know, finding the right fighter they wanted to manage. They have already, who's the tough kid from Oklahoma that just fought a week ago? Saito.
Right. Oh, geez, that was like people were calling it a Gotti war.
That was a bloody war.
When they're saying Gotti war, did you get offended by that?
That wasn't Gotti Ward because Gotti and Ward were better, but it was a damn great fight.
It's cool that that's the barometer.
You know what, man? When two warriors get in the ring and they give everything they have and they bleed like stuck pigs and they, you know, like, I mean, Lenny Z, he's retired and I wish him the best. He showed me that night, like, the heart of a lion and a warrior. And
he had him hurt. He had Saucedo hurt in the fifth round.
And he had him hurt. And Saucedo, like, I don't think Saucedo's the most talented guy out there, but, man, he's got, you know, a big pair of cojones.
Yeah.
I got no real problem with when two guys give that much, the Gatti Ward comparisons. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
But Gatti and Ward, there's only one Gatti and there was only one Ward. And that combination is, in my mind, one of the most dramatic and greatest in the history of our sport.
That was a wild night. I mean, I wish I was there, but I know my father was there, and you were a big part of putting that fight together.
Your father was always there.
Yeah, he's
there. Your father and I hit the road for I don't know how many years together. Your father and I were every big fight together.
It's funny,
and usually,
man,
every bar on earth together days leading up to the fight.
Now here we are at Jack Doyle's bar.
With his friggin' kid.
With me, right here, talking to you, Lou.
Which means I'm fucking old.
It's funny because, like, growing up, obviously you and my dad are good friends, and
I remember you when you were fucking in diapers.
Yeah, no, and here we are right now, and I remember this one time that he brought us to your house in Huntington, and it was an NFL Sunday, and you were screaming about Elvis Gerback, the quarterback on the Chiefs. I guess you had some money on it, or whatever, and I just thought it was so cool because we were running around your yard, we were going in the pool, we were playing on the tennis courts and stuff. Just growing up, I was like, wow, Lou DiBella, he's a crazy cat. And now you're right here, and I get to talk to you for an hour.
Yeah, now I'm an older crazy cat.
You look good, man.
Thank you, bro. I'm trying.
So how's the summer going? What's going on in Lou's life outside of boxing? I know don't know this, that Lou is a two-time owner of two minor league baseball teams. The Montgomery Biscuits.
I got the Richmond Flying Squirrels, the Double-A San Francisco Giant team, and your dad's one of my co-owners.
I know. That's great.
As he is in the Montgomery Biscuits, the Tampa Ray AA team in Montgomery, Alabama, which is a really cool town, and you got to come down and check it out sometime. Montgomery's a cool town.
Can you get me on the field? I want to take BP.
Yeah, that could be arranged.
That could be arranged.
I own the friggin' team. It could be arranged.
What else can we do? Run the bases.
I love minor league baseball. Minor league baseball is like all the negative energy and bullshit and scumbags I have to deal with on a daily basis in boxing. That's the yin and the yang to that is minor league baseball.
That's what I'm saying. When you
actually get to make families and kids happy and see like positive energy.
So the crowds at a Montgomery Biscuit game and a Flying Squirrels game a little different than the Barclays when there's just weed smoke in the air and everyone's Tekashi 6ix9ine is going to show up.
I'll tell you this: there's no anti-gang
units running.
Units cruising around at my minor league parks. Nor does the place smell like a bong.
Oh my God! The it's getting like I don't know, worse and worse, or better and better. It depends on how you look at it. But the Broner fight was absurd in terms of getting into the arena, all the hoopla that was during the.
Now
league.
You know what? For all, you can't. You know,
it is. It's boxing.
I walk down the street. It's decriminalized. People. I think I was offered a joint three times between 9th Avenue.
Dude, I live in Greenpoint, Brooklyn.
Between 9th Avenue and walking into this place, there were like four or five, I passed four or five different people.
Just out in the open, right?
Just out in the open, smoking in the street. Some guy tried to pass me a fucking dude.
They're so like, Rudabella, here, hit me.
Hey, bro, come on.
And then you show up to the interview.
You're
going to
smell weed anywhere. I'll tell you this, though. The security at the Barclays Center and the whole operation at the Barclays Center, I think is the best in boxing right now.
Yeah.
And if you're going to smell an occasional like little whiff of...
worst things.
Of some chronic, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's worst things out there.
Exactly.
But let's play a little game here. Let's play a little game here. Well, actually, I want to talk to you first about, I have to get it out of the way, Joshua Wilder.
Yeah.
I mean, what the hell is going on?
You didn't hear me talking a lot about it the last month or two?
No, because it's just dead now, right?
It wasn't alive. It'll happen when Anthony Joshua and Eddie Hearn want it to happen. Clearly, we all want it to happen.
Right. Deontay wants it to happen. He's doing everything he possibly can.
He can't do more to prove that he wants it to happen. And it'll happen when it happens. I have a couple of words to say about that. It is what it is. And it'll happen when it happens. And when you hear less bullshit and fewer people are writing horseshit and fewer people on social media are trying to micro-analyze every friggin' tweet or
video,
stupid video or something out of Eddie... Like, when you don't hear anything, then you could assume
that's
maybe
what
things
I've
are,
always heard.
Then maybe you'll assume exactly. Things are progressing. Obviously, he's got to fight Povetkin. Obviously, Deontay's not going to sit idle. I had a conversation with Deontay last week. This is what I said to him. Fuck them. Stop worrying about them. You know what I mean? We did everything in our power.
I think the fans know that.
We went above and beyond to levels that I would not have gone to. It wasn't ultimately my decision. He and his management, we offered $50 million. They didn't take it. They were willing to do a really shitty deal for Deontay to get him in the ring with Joshua.
Because
that's how confident... Stupid deal. But that's how confident that Deontay was in beating the guy. They still didn't want to fight him. So you can't make someone fight you. So here's what you got to do. Do you.
Right.
Deontay's got to do Deontay. Get out there. Be seen. Interact with the fans.
You want him to do more of that stuff? Maybe
I want him to
get
do more.
I want him to get on
SportsCenter. I want him to get on WWE.
That'd be awesome.
I want him to get out there and make himself as. I want him to spend less time worrying about a fucker that's running away from him, and more time on himself. And we had a long conversation about this. I really love Deontay. I think he's a good people. And you know what, man? There's no. What you see is what you get with Deontay Wilder. That's not the case with the guys that we're chasing. With the guys we're chasing, it's all about trying to spin a web of bullshit and get people to believe that they are, you know, that it's on us. No. It's on you.
Well,
the fight'll happen when Eddie and AJ want it to happen.
Well, it's clear
right
that
right now we're gonna worry about Deontay. We're gonna build Deontay.
It's clear that Joshua, they want to get him some more fights. Povetkin.
Did anyone really believe the guy's launching something? What is it called?
DAZN.
What the fuck is that? What's the Zen? DAZN. What is that pronounced?
It's DAZN.
It's DAZN, really?
Yes.
It's hard to pronounce based upon that.
It's spelled DAZY.
You know anyone that has that app?
I don't know. I think this is promising. There's a streaming.
You know anyone that has the app?
Not yet, because it's not launched yet.
Oh, it's not launched yet?
No. So
I don't know. I thought it was around.
Well, they have Bellator now, and I mean, I understand if you.
I don't even wish them badly. I wish them well, but he's got a shitload of money to launch something.
That's what I'm trying to say.
To launch this DAZN, he's got a lot of money to launch it, And honestly, anything that brings money to boxing is good. I'm not rooting. I swear to God, Eddie and I fuck around a lot. Like, some of it's real, some of it's not. But, like, you know, we go at each other a lot. But I'm not, like, I'm not rooting against his success.
But if you look at it from a
do you ever
standpoint.
Think, okay, look at it from this standpoint. Who's Eddie's cash cow?
Anthony Joshua.
Look at the rest of Eddie's stable. It ain't much. Who is the whole key to Eddie Stable?
Yeah, that's why he's fighting on the zone. That's why he's fighting for
Becky. Okay, but here's the whole thing. Do you ever think that he was going to let Anthony Joshua get in a ring at the time he's launching his new thing?
No, of course not. That's why he's doing it. I think fans can see
he's going to put him in a 50-50 fight where he might get knocked the fuck out. He's going to do that when he hasn't even launched his site yet.
That's why he's doing it.
It was never happening. But he had to spin the web. He couldn't just say, hey, it's not the right time for Matchroom. It's not the right time for AJ. I don't think Robert McCracken wants. Robert McCracken's a great trainer, smart boxing guy. I don't think he thinks AJ needs any part of Deontay yet. If he did, the fight would happen.
Well, that's the thing. The fans know. The boxing fans, you can't fool boxing fans. They see
you can fool some boxing fans. And let me tell you something. Great Britain, man. And by the way, I was going to say, you know, like congratulations, England, on getting into the semis. But like, come on. They drink a lot of Eddie Hearn Kool-Aid over
there. Well, I'm talking about here in the States. The fans.
Now, where did I see over here you can't promote on Twitter? Like, there's no such thing in America. You got to actually promote. You can't go on Twitter with stacks of $100 bills and driving your Rolls Royce singing, I'm the man, I'm the man. Yeah. That don't play here.
All right. But
you know, you can't do videos like talking to Deontay Wilder, put on dark glasses, and try to sound like an African American. That don't play here.
I guess. Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is the fans can see that Wilder wants to fight.
And the fans, and I think even the British fans, I think even the UK fans were.
Yeah, I saw those tweets
too. The best boxing fans, the most, like, passionate boxing fans in the world. And you know what? In some ways, like, I wish American fight fans supported American fighters.
Yeah, that's another thing in boxing.
American fight fans don't start American fighters. They all want to be, like, all these American fight fans, like, want to be, like, okay, man, I'm esoteric. So, I'm into this, like, guy from Japan, or I'm into this guy whose name
I
can't pronounce.
It's like a hipster sport.
Come on. Like
they want to like the up-and-coming guy that no one likes.
They want to like the guy no one knows.
Exactly. That's
like,
what I mean. That's why
give a little bit of love to your great American fighters. Right. And right now, there are a lot of great American fighters.
So, do you think we'll see the fight in 2019?
2019, yes. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily say, based upon what I hear and see from Eddie and those people.
Well, you know, he has this two-fight deal at Wembley, so it has to be there. They're kind of like
I think you'll see it 2019 before the end of the year.
Hopefully.
I don't think it'll be necessarily the first fight in 2019. And who the fuck says we have to go to Wembley? I mean, if there's more money in Vegas, why isn't the fight in Vegas? Every great British fighter has wanted to fight in Vegas.
Well, yeah. Well, clearly he's the cash cow and he doesn't want to leave.
All right. Well, then maybe, look, we'll see. You know what? We ain't going to chase them like lapdogs with our tongues hanging out.
Right. I like the idea of him getting
out there
more.
Done that. Right now, we've been there and done that. Right now, Deontay's got to continue to knock people out and to build his star power.
Get him in WWE against Braun Strowman, the big heavyweight in the WWE. Look what he did for Mayweather. He went on Raw. Remember, he punched Big Show. He didn't fake it. He actually hit him.
Let me tell you something. There ain't one freaking guy in WWE that could withstand a clean
nice
punch.
Right hand.
One right hand from the Bronze Bomber.
I enjoy talking to him, man. He's come on the show before.
Puts down the monster among men.
What about Brock Lesnar?
Puts down the Big Show. Fuck Brock Lesnar. He'd go to sleep with less than a shot.
Him in the UFC cage.
He might be able to jab Brock Lesnar to sleep.
Yeah, he doesn't like getting punched in the face.
But I sort of like Brock Lesnar, actually.
Here we go. We're going to play right now.
I like WWE, by the way. It's one of my, like, guilty pleasures.
It's fine. I still watch.
I'm a wrestling fan.
I love to see Wilder in there. I think it would be great cross-promotion because the fans are insane. The rabid fan base.
And Deontay's a charismatic guy. We got to do more getting him out there.
I agree. All right, so let's play a game right now. It's called Five Rounds with Lou DiBella. I got some questions I have for you. I know you were trying to sneak a peek at them, but I was covering them. But here they are. I want you to say what comes to mind when I say these names. I'm going to throw some names out for you. Sergio Martinez.
El Gran Campeón. The greatest fighter ever promoted.
And you guys remain very good friends. I see the interactions on Twitter.
We promote fighters together. I promote fighters that he is managed. He's a dear friend of mine. I love Sergio Martinez, and we'll be friends for life.
I'll never forget the night that he knocked out Paul Williams.
The most loyal fighter, the two most loyal fighters I've ever had the pleasure of working with, both of whom I love dearly, Sergio Martinez and Mickey Ward.
Wow. Yeah, and bring it back to that night when he knocked out Paul Williams in the rematch.
Oh, that was crazy stuff.
I was at ringside for that.
I want to tell you something. That was crazy.
That was a knockout and a half.
There was crazy stuff that night. he kept saying, he used to call me Maestro. And that whole week he was saying to me, I'm a nervous wreck when my fighters, particularly if I love the fighter. You know what I mean? Like when I have a person, I even though I know Regis is supposed to beat Velasco, I'll be a nervous wreck because I love Regis.
Of course.
You know, and there's certain fighters who take a more of a personal sort of relationship.
Half the fun of watching one of your fighters fight is watching you in the background run up and down.
Particularly if it's a fighter that I feel that kind of emotional connection to.
Like the Wilder's last.
Yeah, Wilder, I feel that emotional connection to Wilder too. I mean, there are guys that I love them. They're my friends, and I get really caught up in it. The whole week of that second Paul Williams fight, I was afraid we were going to get jobbed. I, you know, the first fight, I thought that Sergio won, right. And Sergio's like, Maestro, I'm a machine. I'm a machine. Don't worry, I have this. I'm a machine. I went into his dressing room before the fight, and there's a little piece of paper. And he says, put this in your pocket and don't open it till after the fight. And it basically said, third round, I will knock him cold.
Oh, my God. What was it, second? Or was it second? No,
right? It was the second. He was off by a round, but he predicted the punch.
Unbelievable.
He predicted the punch.
Unbelievable.
And by the way, when I watched the fight in repeat, he almost landed the same punch in the first round. And he saw this flaw in Paul, that when Paul threw the jab, how he left himself open. And he knew the punch that was going to knock.
Yeah.
And he thought he'd get him by three. And he got him in the second.
I was ringside for that. And people always ask me, what's the craziest
knockout? The highest I've ever jumped.
Craziest knockout you've ever seen. Everyone always asks me. I say, Sergio Martinez, Paul Williams in Atlantic City. After that, we go out. We go partying. All my friends were in town. So that was a very memorable night in Atlantic City. I know it was for you, too. Paulie Malignaggi.
Little guinea bastard. I mean, Paulie and I are cool. We'll always be cool. I mean, he hurt me a lot. I mean, to be honest with you, I treated him like a member of my family. He broke his hand 6 times in the first few, like 5 years I had him, and I still made him, help him make a lot of money, and but you know what? Like, also, he did a lot of, even after we had our falling out, and he left. Paulie got the most out of what he has in every way,
absolutely, including,
I started him even in the commentary. I told him he'd be good at it. He did some Broadway boxing stuff, but he turned that into really a great career at Showtime and being a top announcer doing stuff in the UK. Paulie and I are friendly. I think I did really right by Paulie. I was disappointed for a period of time, but he and I are cool now. We see each other. We're friends.
Yeah, I we've had our issues. He's not a big fan of CompuBox. He's gone out of his way a bunch of times to say disparaging
things. You got to have respect for anybody who gets every ounce they have out of themselves, squeezes all that talent, or whatever they have in themselves, is able to squeeze every bit out of it and make a success of themselves.
See, despite the fact that he has issues with us, I always respected him. That he basically went in there with one hand. He fought everyone there was to fight. So.
Couldn't punch. I mean, he couldn't punch. There were things that he was always at a disadvantage, and he had a great career. Mm-hmm. And he's still having a great career as an announcer. And I'm glad we buried the hatchet because we have a lot of history, and most of it's good.
Mickey Ward.
The greatest. I mean, the greatest guy. The most loyal guy. The greatest warrior. Just a regular lunch pail guy, still working construction.
Is he really?
Yeah, he rides the roller. I said to him, Mickey, you really need to do that? He goes, it keeps me away from Charlene.
Everyone knows Charlene from the movie.
Believe me, like.
What about Charlene's seven
everybody
sisters?
Everybody who's married or lives with a woman knows you need a little break now and then.
And the sisters, too.
Yeah, look,
eight of them.
Mickey's life was wild, and Dickie had a wild ride. Mickey had a wild ride. Mickey was the Irish mirror image of Arturo Gatti.
I was going to say next, Arturo Gatti.
And Mickey, I love Mickey. And by the way, Mickey, you should get Mickey on here.
I would love to.
But Mickey just recently came forward and said that he's been diagnosed that he has the likelihood that he has CTE.
Boxing.
I'll say this: when Mickey retired. We retired with an offer on the table of over $1 million for another fight. But the people around him and Mickey himself knew that the time was there, that there was no more left. But Mickey's, you know, a happy guy, and the symptoms he has right now are not like the kind of violent symptoms or the kind that are ruining his life or causing him to be someone else. But he has symptoms of CTE, and it's something that I heard him on a podcast talk about, and it was so interesting because the guys that did the podcast just blew right past it and just wanted to have a happy conversation.
They don't know what to say. You don't know what to say. Or even right now, I'm struggling with what to ask you next because there's such like a stigma around it. We're seeing with football players, and we're seeing
it's not
what's
a
coming
stigma,
out with
but them. It's a matter of understanding that this is the hurt business and that guys are putting their lives at risk, and there is a point in time, particularly with guys who are blood and guts warriors, where they have to walk away. I think you asked about Arturo. I love Arturo like he was a kid brother. I mean, Arturo was family to me. I mean, Pat Lynch knew that. Main Events knew that. You know, even after I left HBO and I was a competitor in Main Events, they always knew my relationship with Arturo. And when there was the funeral for Arturo in Jersey, the memorial service, and, you know, Pat and Kathy reached out to me, you know, to make one of the eulogies because he was my boy. He was my, you know, pal. I'm getting emotional even now thinking about it. But I got to tell you, man, he the way he fought, the way he lived, and he fought a lot with reckless abandon. He lived with passion. He fought with an abundance of passion. And you know, he had, I saw a quote after Anthony Bourdain committed suicide. I saw a quote from Anthony Bourdain where he said, pretty much like your body's not a temple, it's an amusement park.
Yeah.
Enjoy the ride. Yeah. Arturo enjoyed the ride, but I have no doubt that those wars and too many of them and maybe some fights that should never have been made based on skill levels. It's very sad. I to this day believe that I don't believe that he killed himself.
No, that's something. It's hard to think that, right?
I will never believe that.
We're closing in on 9 years almost.
Yeah, I'll never believe that. I'll never believe that. Arturo never quit in anything, and he wasn't going to quit on his own life.
Right.
If there was anyone I ever met in my life that wouldn't quit, it was Arturo Gatti. And Gatti and Ward, it's appropriate that you asked about Mickey first and Gatti right there because they were like blood brothers. You know, they became brothers.
Like, you ever get tired of people bringing up that question to you, the fact that you made that fight? Do you ever get tired of talking about it?
No, I don't get tired of talking about those two guys or that fight. And I don't get tired of honoring the memory of Arturo Gatti, who will, in my mind, always be the greatest warrior.
Oh, my favorite fighter of all
time. The greatest warrior I ever encountered. And if he was one, then 1A was Mickey Ward.
Do you think he'd get into commentating if he was still around, Gatti? He's crazy, right?
I don't know about that.
I think about that all the time.
I got to be honest with you. I don't think with his Canadian accent and Mickey's accent, you couldn't understand the fucking two of them. Particularly when they had a couple of... When Mickey and Artur had a couple of these in them, and they started going 90 miles an hour talking to each other.
What was that like? That must have been wild.
It was hilarious, and I don't know how many times I hung out with them, but there would be a point in time where only the two of them could understand what the other one was saying.
Yeah, their own language.
No, neither one of them should have been a commentator. I should be a commentator.
Yeah, but... What went into that? Just the fact that you're sitting back and you're like, you know what, Mickey, I got Mickey Ward here.
I was in an emergency room with Mickey and Arturo after the first fight, sitting on like adjoining beds, laughing their ass off.
It's crazy.
Like, and both of them looked like they like needed to be admitted. They were beaten to a fucking pulp.
Yeah.
And they were sitting there joking with each other. And like the respect between those two guys was extraordinary. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. The respect level, the fact that they became friends, and
but they knew that there was a connection between them that was different than almost any other fighters ever had. Even look, Morales and Barrera never really liked each other. Like they, you know, there've been a lot of other rivalries. Bo and Holyfield weren't pals. You know, Ward and Gatti, they became almost like alter egos, and they understood that Arthur believed that Mickey was his Irish counterpart, and Mickey believed Arthur was his Italian counterpart.
It's unbelievable.
And like they just looked at each other and saw, as fighters, the same guy.
All right, I got a name for you. Bob Arum. The Bob Father.
The Bob Father. He's a complicated guy, you know.
When you dial up his phone and you're getting on the phone,
I've had some, but look, I got a good, weird relationship with Arum.
Yeah, I would say
there's been bumps in the road that have been ridiculous. There's been love hate. There's been, you know, times where his wife was mad at me because of shit I said. There was like, one time I tried to jump over a couch because he pissed me off so much at a meeting. He said horrible things, rumors about me at times. But he's a very smart guy. I learned a lot from him and his company about matchmaking and promotion. We still speak and we have a good relationship. And I got to tell you, I mean, like, it's a complicated, like I said, it's a complicated relationship. It's not all smooth sailing, but I think there's a healthy mutual respect. And I've, over the years, I've had some, you know, as I've had some bad situations with Aaron, but I've had a lot of fun with Aaron. And I certainly unequivocally believe that he's a legitimate Hall of Fame promoter, one of the greatest promoters that's ever been in the game.
That's funny.
We have a lot of different philosophies.
Yeah, we have.
I don't agree with him on a lot of the ways business is conducted. We're very different. But I respect him.
Yeah, he came on the show and I said, do you think you're the greatest promoter of all time? He got very uncomfortable with that. He said, no, how do you even know he's the greatest promoter of all time? But he also said that smoking weed is the key to his longevity. I kind of knew he was going to answer that. I kind of said, put it on a tee for him. I said, what's the key to longevity? You know, you're 88. However old he is. 88.
Well, you know, I hope he's right.
So you're going to live forever, right?
I hope he's right, man. I hope he's right.
Right.
And if you're going to ask the inevitable question,
you're going to live forever.
No, I'm not going to live forever, but I can tell you that Bob and I have indulged together on a few occasions.
I'd like to be a fly on the wall for that.
Let me tell you something, man. You know, I don't know about weed being the key to life, but I'll tell you that I'm not a big drinker. Like, you know, I'm just not. Like, I like a cold beer, mm-hmm. and I like my scotch or whatever, but I don't like to be drunk.
Right.
And I think people tend to be violent and nasty and lose control and black out drunk. I mean, there are a lot of bad mm-hmm. drunks.
Yeah.
There's not that many bad stoners.
Yeah.
Not that many bad stoners.
Well, the reason he brought it up to his fighters. He said he would rather have his fighters, smoke some weed to alleviate pain rather than drink or do pills. So he took that route.
I haven't had that discussion, but I'll be honest with you. I've had situations where I've never released a fighter where I could have for busting a weed test. I think it would have been wrong. Because I mean, if someone recreational,
weed, I know.
So, I mean, it's not. Believe me, it's not a performance-enhancing drug either.
No. Ask Julio Cesar Chavez.
No one wants a particularly mellow fighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it would have been hypocritical of me to release a fighter for smoking weed. So I've never done that.
You only release a fighter Tor Hammer who wouldn't come off the stool.
There was more to that story though when I released Tor because, Tor had a fight before then where he also didn't go off the stool,
yeah.
where he said that he'd been sick. And leading up to that fight in Macau, he called one day and said, told someone in my office that he wasn't feeling well. And I was like, wait a minute. And I called him. This beer, sorry.
Chug a beer.
Actually, I need a sip. And he told me that he wasn't feeling great. And I said, look, Tor, man, if you're not feeling great and you're sick, pull out of the fight. But don't go to Macau.
Released him on Twitter. That's what it was.
Don't go to Macau.
People love that.
Don't go to Macau. I think it was the first time it's ever happened in the history of sports.
Yeah, that's
that was the first athlete in the history of sports ever released on Twitter.
I opened up Twitter.
I have.
It's like, you're released. I was like, are you?
Okay.
This is unbelievable.
It was. I had to make the. I had to do it in writing. I certainly had to write on Twitter.
Yeah. Lives forever.
I was sort of infuriated that night because at the point at which he stopped fighting, I had seen a hard punch land from the other guy, and I actually thought if Tor wasn't ahead in the fight, it was an even fight.
Right.
But I knew that he had sort of like almost given me this like warning before, like by telling someone in my office that he was like, and
right.
I called him. And I said, if you're sick, I don't want you fighting. I don't want to defraud people. I don't want to see the fight end in a corner. And then when the fight ended in a corner, I got infuriated, and I'm a little bit of a hothead.
Just a little.
That night, the hothead came out. I'm cool with Tor. Tor's moved on with his life, and God bless him, whatever.
Here, I got a question for you. How would you explain the boxing Twitter?
I don't know, man. It's a fucking weird place.
It is a very strange place.
Very strange place.
The James Bags of the world. Do you know that guy?
Well, no, I don't want to pay attention to particular names, but there are a lot
so
of guys
on
boxing. Well, first of all, it blows my mind how singularly focused so many of the people on boxing Twitter are. Look, there were some lovely people on Boxing Twitter and talented people on Boxing Twitter and unexpected people.
I'm talking about
that girl, Amanda Kelly, who's an artist. She's a brilliant artist. Right. And she's a sweet, nice person. And she's out there being nice on Boxing Twitter, which is highly unusual.
You're not going to get ahead being nice on Boxing
Twitter. No, you get hate and vile, like vitriol and poison and fucking motherfuckers without a life.
Pretty much.
And people that probably haven't had sex since they were born. I mean, they're like... Like Boxing Twitter has got like this. There's a nerd singularly focused. I'm completely oblivious to the rest of the world, and all I think about is boxing.
I can't.
And I hate you if you don't make a particular fight.
Right.
I hate you if you disagree with me. You're a piece of shit if you think someone's better than somebody else.
Right.
Boxing Twitter is like sort of messed up.
It's like a cesspool.
It's yeah, man. It's like a. I don't know. It's like that. Like when those restaurants have those bins that all the grease and the oil.
Yeah,
like
yeah. They call that a Jersey Turnpike. You squeeze it out, and that's a shot.
It's
like the mats. You know what I mean?
Man, like but Boxing Twitter's got a lot of pollution in it, man.
It does. All right, here we go.
But I'm still on it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're a lot more zen though lately on Twitter.
Dude, you know what? I if someone's just being horrible, I'm no longer. I don't go back at people anymore. I mute.
Mute is one of the best tools.
I use the mute button because if you block, then you get even trolled for blocking.
Yeah.
And then they troll you from other accounts for blocking.
Losers.
So I just use the mute button. And I try to, I really mean this. I one of my New Year's resolutions like a year ago, not this past New Year, the year before, was like, you know, be myself on Twitter who I really am. Like, don't let bullshit like upset me.
Right.
Don't take
you can,
a lot of
that
stuff
can
seriously.
Happen. You can get those mentions, man. You can. Some of these people are just nasty.
No, the people are. But you don't understand. Like some
they
of
wouldn't
stuff,
say that to your face.
Some of the stuff that's been written to me has been so vile and horrible.
You wouldn't say it to your face. You know?
Oh, please, I beat the shit out of them. But some of the stuff that's been written to me has been horrendous, just vile. And what I try to do is I try to be like my mother was always telling me. You know, you're in a bad business. Be your best self. Be your best self. Thank God my mother's still around to tell me to be my best self. But I try to do more of that on Twitter.
All right, here we go. Last one here. Five rounds with Lou DeBella. What is your fondest memory in boxing? Something that happened in the ring and then something that happened outside.
So many.
To narrow it down.
In boxing would probably be... it was a twofold fight. It was when Hopkins fought Jermaine the first time. And Bernard and I are civil now, and he said some things personally that allowed me, like he had some personal conversations with me and said some things that allowed me to bury that hatchet. So that hatchet is buried. But he really wronged me. You know, he lied about me and I had to sue him. That was a bad time. It was horrible, man. It was a horrible time in my life. It hurt my business, hurt my life.
But what a storyline, though, to have Jermaine Taylor.
And then I had my kid that I developed from scratch.
Your new fighter. Fight him. That was wild.
And at the weigh-in for that fight, Bernard was really trying to get under my skin. And he made a pretty terrible comment about my brother's suicide.
Oh, jeez.
Which blew my mind that someone would say something like that to me. And I got to be honest with you, I think he's maybe grown to the point that if he had that to do again, he wouldn't have done it.
Right.
I hope to believe that.
Right.
But the way Jermaine reacted to it, like he almost killed, if people like look at it, they had to separate him. He went at Bernard at that weigh-in. And that's because he heard that. And it meant a lot to me that that happened. And then when there's a picture of me, and I think I've never jumped higher in my life. I think I could have jammed the basketball if it was in my hand at that moment. When the decision that I thought was appropriate, because I fully believed that Jermaine had won the fight, I just believed that they probably were going to give it to Bernard. But when Jermaine was announced the winner of that fight, I jumped higher than I've ever jumped in my life.
I've seen the picture.
So that was a very, like, there was a personal sort of redemption kind of thing to that night.
Yeah, that was a wild night.
That sort of was bigger than boxing for me.
Okay, how about something that happened, you know,
the Gaddy War trilogies were, all of them were highlights.
Something where boxing has taken you somewhere.
The first Boxing After Dark, where McKinney and Barrera was an all-time classic. And the string of Boxing After Darks and the enthusiasm of all the HBO announcers and production people, the role we had right at the beginning of Boxing After Dark, where it was unbelievable fight of the year candidate, fight of the year candidate, fight of the year candidate, fight of the year candidate. And everybody was rolling with that excitement.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a joyful experience to work at HBO Sports at that time. There's no joy in boxing right now for anybody. Maybe for you guys, I hope, doing this. But I don't really know a lot of people that have been in the sport a long time that think it's a pleasant,
the business
happy.
Of it has,
the business has become vile.
But the personalities are there.
I mean, yeah, the characters are there, but a lot of the characters are dying off. There aren't a lot of characters left. And Aram's in his 80s, and King's in his late 80s, and you know the characters are
like
dying.
Like the Bert Sugars of the world.
Yeah, I mean, say what you will about me, I'm probably one of the latest.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to say. That's
the youngest and last characters.
That's what I wanted to end.
Not a lot of characters left, but I mean the sport was a much more collegial, happy place. People went on the road, and the promoter on one side of the fight, and the promoter on the other side of the fight, they would have a big dinner, and like 20, 30 people go out and eat like pigs and get fucked up, you're wasted, and just
great
tell stories
yeah.
and the storytelling, and you'd have a great, like, it would elevate you. Now, like, if I barely go to, I used to go to every big fight because I love boxing. I barely want to go to some of my own anymore, even if they're good. Like, the environment is negative. The there's too much negative energy. Twitter is a reflection
of
ways.
It's a gift and a curse.
Yeah, but the boxing Twitter is somewhat a reflection of the business of boxing today.
I agree.
Boxing Twitter, and I think your dad, if we had this conversation, would agree with this. Boxing, if there was Twitter back when,
yeah.
Boxing Twitter would have had a very different vibe.
Oh, of course.
Different feel back then.
Sugar Ray Leonard in the 80s and the 90s, and like you said with HBO. But Lou, you're a character. I love you. And thanks for coming on the show.
Saturday night, Regis Prograis, live on ESPN. Show starts 7 Eastern time.
Right.
Teofimo Lopez, even though I don't promote him, I love the kid. He's a really good fighter. He's opening the show. Charles Conwell will be on the ESPN app fighting Travis Scott from Louisiana on the undercard. There's a loaded night of boxing that night. It's the same night Manny Pacquiao fights.
What do you think of Pacquiao before we let you go? Do you think he's got anything left?
We're going to find out. But, I mean, the fight's also in Malaysia, so... I'm going to guess Manny's going to be pretty jacked up for the fight.
He's going to,
Manny's going to look like King Kong on Saturday night. But it's a dangerous fight because, like, Matisse didn't look good his last fight, but Matisse's still a puncher.
It's I think it could be a nostalgia fight for fans.
It's
they,
an interesting fight.
They want to see Pacquiao
in a brawl. It's two guys who are on the wrong side of the mountain.
Right.
But it still should be a competitive, interesting fight.
The whole interview, I'm looking at this giant ring you have on your hand.
This is the San Francisco Giants 2014 World Series ring. I have a 10, I have a 12, I have a 14, and you never know. Like, the Giants are still hanging in there this year. My boy Bruce Bochy, the greatest manager in baseball, the team is hanging tough even though they've had horrible injuries.
As a Yankee fan, can you place a call and see if you can get Madison Bumgarner in pinstripes? Can you make that happen?
I'd actually rather you get Zach Wheeler in pinstripes. Because my Mets,
the Mets
need,
are never going to trade
the Mets need to, you know, they should, because the Mets just need to improve because yeah. they suck.
The Mets are terrible. We can go on and on for hours about how bad the Mets are, but Lou DiBella.
I'm still a Mets fan.
I know.
Fuck me.
I know.